I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. December 23rd, 2003 was a black day on the calendar of the U.S. meatpacking industry. That was the day when the first case of mad cow disease was found in Washington State. Since then, there haven't been any more cases reported in this country. And even though the infected animal came from Canada in the first place, the news is still affecting America's meat industry. For one thing, Japan says it still won't accept any U.S. beef unless all the animals have been tested for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE. So the managers of a small Midwestern meatpacking plant thought, why not? Creekstone Farms in Arkansas City has been selling top-quality black Angus beef to the Japanese market. So they told the U.S. Department of Agriculture that they would test all their animals for mad cow, and here's where the story gets interesting. The USDA said no, that it was not about to let a small meatpacking firm set what might turn out to be a national precedent. Their concern is that if one company is allowed to promise that it's checking for mad cow, then U.S. consumers might demand the test on all beef. And so, Connection listeners, here's where you come in. How concerned are you about the safety of beef in America? Some scientists say testing for BSE is unnecessary and a waste of money. But if there's any chance it could detect a sick cow, should it be done? Now, there's another way of looking at this. Does a test that ensures the safety of American beef for Japanese consumers essentially mean that American food safety standards are being set by Japan? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're starting today's program with Kevin Pence. He is the Vice President of Operations for Creekstone Farms in Arkansas City, in Kansas. He's joining us on the phone from his office there. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Dick.
Now, I understand that the U.S. Department of Agriculture told you back in early April that you wouldn't be allowed to do this test for mad cow disease, and you've asked them again. What's the latest?
Well, we actually did our original submission back in early February. It took them about 6 weeks to respond a no on April 8th. So far, we've actually wrote another letter, which included about nine questions that had different synopsis of how we could test or even let the USDA come in and do the testing at our cost or the Japanese government to do the testing. And so far in the last 8 to 9 weeks, we still have not received any kind of verbal or written response from that.
Silly question here, but why or how could the USDA stop you from testing if that's what you wanted to do?
Well, they're actually citing a 1913 Toxin Serum Act through APHIS branch of the USDA, and they're using that 1913 law that states that the USDA has control over testing of animal health. And being this is, they're considering an animal health issue, they're saying that they control the actual test kits that will be used to test for BSE, and therefore they will not allow any other entities, public entities or private, other than USDA, to actually purchase the test kits to perform the testing.
So it's not just that you're being prevented from testing. You can't even buy the equipment that's necessary to do that, right?
That's correct. And we've invested about $500,000 to develop a laboratory, which we think is probably the best laboratory, and we've been told that by different universities and outside laboratory, third-party laboratories that are performing the test. We actually built that adjacent to our processing facility in our Kansas City, Kansas, and hired six qualified technicians, sent people to France to perform the test. So we're still on the hold mode right now.
Kevin, we called the USDA and asked them to participate in the program, and they said that they wouldn't put someone up to talk about it, that they consider this testing issue, as it involves Creekstone Farms, to be sort of a closed issue. All I know is what they have been reported as having said in the press, that they don't like the idea that some smaller operation like Creekstone is going to set a national precedent that if you get to test for mad cow, we'll all be looking for that sticker on the package in the supermarket. Is that the same explanation that they gave you?
Well, actually, we've never received a direct written explanation. It's all been verbal in meetings in Washington. But it basically, they're being influenced by the larger processor companies and National Cattlemen's Beef Association groups. We represent less than one half of 1% of the total beef process on a weekly basis. And we're not looking to do this in order to justify that our product is safer in the domestic trade. We're merely trying to get the Asian export market, which represented about 30% of our total volume back in December, that additional revenue back in our hands. And so it's kind of unfortunate that they're using this as a precedent setting when we represent such little amount of the actual beef process in U.S.
My understanding, Kevin, is that the test is being performed on animals killed in Britain, in Europe, and in Japan. Is that correct?
Yes, and we're using the same test methodology, the exact same company we bought the equipment from and the test procedures that is being used in European Union and Japan, and also what the USDA is going to be using for their 268,000 surveillance testing that starts today.
I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, what they are starting today, because it's confusing. I'm going to wait for some of the other guests to join us on the program before we get to that. But just before we widen the conversation a bit more, Kevin, you used to work for one of these big heavyweight meat packers, Cargill. Is that right?
That is correct.
So when you say that it's the big companies that are leaning on the USDA to prevent this kind of testing becoming industry-wide, What's your basis for making that assessment?
Well, I think the larger companies are a commodity company that produce a majority, in fact, 80% are controlled by four of the large companies in the U.S., control 80% of the beef process. They're a commodity company that perform on volume and slim margins. We're more of a high-end, we cater to the four-star restaurants as well as the higher-end export companies. So they look at their margin and not wanting to add costs. We don't mind adding costs as long as that cost can be passed to the consumer. And the consumer in this case would be the Japanese consumer.
I should also point out for our listeners that we invited spokespeople from Tyson's Fresh Meats, Cargill, Excel Corporation, ConAgra, the National Beef Packing Corporation, to our company to be with us on the program. They declined, as did the lobby group that oversees a lot of this. That's the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, saying they consider further discussion of the testing issue to be irresponsibly scaring consumers, giving consumers the impression that beef is unsafe. It is a complicated scientific as well as commercial story. And to help us look at the other side, Dean Cliver is going to be joining us now. He's at a studio at the University of California's Davis campus. He's a professor with the university's Department of Population Health and Reproduction and School of Veterinary Medicine. Dean Cliver, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
What do you think of this controversy? You know this issue pretty well. You've sit on committees with other experts on this and the WHO. Tell me how you're hearing this story unfold.
Fortuitously, I was in Japan when they had their first BSE diagnosis and had a one-on-one with a member of their parliament right after they declared that they were going to do 100% testing, even down to veal calves. Turned out, I didn't know till later, that he was an MD, and he knew better. And I told him I thought that was an unconscionable misapplication of limited food safety resources.
You're getting ahead of me already. He knew better what? What was wrong with the testing on very, very young cattle that you're describing?
Well, there are two problems. Tests, as they are done, call for taking out a specific part of the brain stem and sending it to a laboratory. When you're dealing with animals under 24 months of age, and I believe that's the case for everything that Creekstone has been sending to Japan, one, the levels of prions, even in an incubating case, will be too low for detection by the available tests.
Prions would be what would indicate the presence of BSE?
Well, ostensibly, they are what's going to cause disease in the consumer, if
right.
anything.
Okay.
Although, once again, they aren't in red meat, according to all the work that's been done in the UK. But what's being tested, then, is a piece of brainstem to see if there are prions there. And the two problems are, in younger animals, even if they happen to be incubating a case of BSE, the prion level is way below what tests can detect. And two, the prions aren't in the brainstem at this stage.
So what you're saying is that the testing of cattle, say, under 20 months, for example, is kind of meaningless because nothing's going to show up?
It's absolutely irrelevant to the safety of the product.
Kevin Pence, is that your understanding of it, that even if you were to test the young black Angus that you're exporting, chances are you wouldn't find any BSE?
That is correct. But I'd like to point out that the actual test, the reason why we want to test is this is our largest consumer is Japan, and it was back in December. Whether we agree or disagree with the relevance and science basis behind testing, this is a demand that a customer is asking for. And so what we're merely trying to do is meet that demand and pass those costs on to that customer. We agree with the science and the science basis. Whether we agree or disagree with the Japanese testing 100%, I mean, we're standing neutral. But it's up to the livelihood of our company and to get the export market back. And if that's something that we're requiring, then we should do it.
So Dean Cliver, if it's not a science issue, if it's a money issue, does the idea of testing all the animals stand up just from a commercial point of view? The buyer's supposed to be the one who's right.
Well, ultimately, it's the consumer who pays. There's no doubt about that. Nobody who's in the food business expects to lose money off of it consistently.
Right.
Now, Creekstone is in a situation that I understand. Food is one of the few commodity groups, if you will, that the United States has had a consistently favorable balance of payments for over the years. We export, in dollar terms, more food than we import, even though we import a lot of food. So from that standpoint, while our overall balance of payments is reinforced, we're in way better shape because we are exporting food. On the other hand, we're in the situation where there's no moral high ground for the United States in a matter like this because we are talking or threatening to go to the World Trade Organization about Japan's insisting on excluding our beef from their market. But we are the 24th country in the world to have reported a case of BSE, and the 23 countries before us have all been consistently and irrevocably embargoed by the United States. So we are in a situation where we're saying Japan shouldn't do that to us.
Although we're doing it to a bunch of...
We've been doing it to everyone else. And there are countries like Finland and Austria that reported one case of BSE 2 or 3 years ago and have never found another, even though they are, as far as I know, in the standard European testing mode of either you choose 24 months or 30 months, but you test every slaughter animal. They've never found another.
Dean Cliver, just hang on half a sec. Quick last question, Kevin Pence, for you. The economic effects of not being able to sell to Japan, what's it going to mean to your company? What's it mean?
Well, since December, the end of December, when the BSE case was found in Washington, when we had to pull back containers that were overseas, it's $200 a head to us, and that's the differential right now on a per-head basis of what we're getting for domestic product and what could be obtained out of Japan with agreed-upon pricing for the months that we're in right now.
You've got several hundred workers. Can you survive?
We are attempting to. It's been a struggle, and we've been in a negative profit and loss statement ever since December.
Kevin, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Kevin Pence is Vice President of Operations at Creekstone Farms in Arkansas City. And Connection listeners, we continue this conversation when we come back after the break. With food safety such a priority for those of us who consume the food, why would federal regulators prevent ranchers doing more screening? Do you buy the argument on a science basis or on a marketing basis? What's your own perspective? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, a conversation about the testing of beef in America, a call for those that would take exported beef to have all cattle tested for mad cow disease, and the USDA saying, hold on a second here, you're not going to be setting policy for the rest of the country. It is a story about the power of the lobby of the large meat packers, as well as a story about science and health and consumer confidence. And we'd like to know where your confidence level is. We're going to bring Bill Bullard into the conversation. Now, Bill is the Chief Executive Officer of the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund. United Stock Growers of America is joining us from Yellowstone Public Radio Studios in Billings, Montana. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Dick.
Your organization, tell me what it is the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund does.
Dick, we represent the live cattle industry. RCAF USA exclusively represents the live cattle producers in the overall beef supply chain, which means we do not represent the interests of the packers and processors and importers and exporters and retailers, but rather only those family farmers and ranchers that actually raise the live animals from which the beef is derived.
And you listened to Kevin Pence describing the situation over at Creekstone. Is he all alone on this one?
Oh, absolutely not. Our membership strongly supports the efforts of Creekstone to be able to voluntarily test as a direct response to a consumer-driven request. Again, that consumer is Japan. And we believe that while the United States should properly establish the minimal health and safety standards, that private entrepreneurs and cutting-edge packers like Creekstone should be afforded the opportunity to build niche markets. And Creekstone is offering a reasonable solution to the presently closed markets to Japan. It would represent a significant economic benefit to U.S. cattle producers.
Let me just ask you about that if I can, Bill, though, because I'm having a little bit of difficulty trying to understand whether or not what we're talking about is the safety of the meat that's consumed or simply a commercial exercise in trying to open up the market for the sort of high-end beef that Creekstone's producing.
Well, it's a matter of perspective. The United States has always maintained the most stringent health and safety standards in the world. Our beef is safe, and the reason it is because we have adopted very robust defense measures to prevent the introduction of BSE.
Right.
Japan, on the other hand, has had several outbreaks of BSE. They did not follow some of the risk mitigation measures that the United States implemented back in 1997.
Risk mitigation measures, that was actually being a little bit more careful about what feed was given to the animals. Is that right?
Well, two, actually. In 1989, we adopted a policy that would completely protect our U.S. cattle herd and our consumers by avoiding BSE completely. We adopted a policy that said we will not import ruminants or ruminant products from any country where BSE is known to exist. And then in 1997, we implemented the feed ban, which was to prevent the spread of the disease if ever it occurred within our country. Japan is differently situated, though. They have had several outbreaks. Consumer confidence has been eroded, and so they, too, have decided to adopt among the most stringent mitigation measures in order to maintain their consumer confidence. And by doing so, they are extending that now to their suppliers and have approached Creekstone and said, we will willingly accept your beef, provided you meet our standards. So from Creekstone's perspective, this is a consumer-driven request to exceed minimally established standards, and we believe that that is precisely what the USDA should be facilitating in an open and free enterprise system that we operate under here. We're very disappointed in the USDA's actions.
Let's just have a check with some of our listeners as to how they're seeing this and the action of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're taking our first call from Alex, who's on the line from Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
That sounded all right.
First question is, I actually have two, if you don't mind. How does your previous guest cited an old regulation. I'm wondering how they can actually prohibit a test kit from being bought. Like, when people try to get around cable systems, it's not illegal to own the little chip that gets you around the cable box, but it's legal to use it. How can you actually make it illegal to own something?
Dean Cliver, this move by the USDA to say, hang on a second, we are not going to open up to voluntary or private sector testing, and we're going to go so far as to even prevent the sale or distribution of the testing kits. Is the USDA on firm ground with this?
Two things you need to realize. One is that USDA is in the executive branch of government. They enact regulations to enforce laws, but the law that they're enforcing in that instance is from Congress. And until Congress changes it, they are obliged to enforce it as they think appropriate. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody thinks that's a misinterpretation, they need to go to court. So, one, this is a Congress-passed law, and from 1913 till now, Congress has not seen fit to withdraw it or whatever. Okay, so that's one aspect of it. The other is, why not just let anybody who wants to put together a test kit run out and test things? look at the impact of one positive test for BSE on this country. We've turned our food safety priorities completely upside down. I think we have a less safe food supply in consequence of overreaction to one case of BSE. That could have happened years ago if just any old laboratory that didn't have USDA supervision was allowed to apply any test they wanted to and say, we're testing for BSE.
As soon as you got
a positive, you would have had the same repercussions as with one gold standard test.
I understand that the sort of earthquake effect that a positive test would have on the beef industry, but what about the interests of the consumers? Surely the consumers would like to know if there's a positive test out there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, the consumers have lost big time with a legitimate positive test because, as I say, we've misapplied our food safety priorities to the point where even though the price of beef has gone up, supply is down, consumption of beef has gone up since 1223, we are diverting resources to chase BSE that we need to handle serious food safety problems in the United States. We will not save one life by preventing variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the human form of this, because we weren't going to have any. We are in a situation of diverting resources from other foodborne diseases that we know are killing people in this country.
Bill Bullard, what about that? The idea that to go ahead with this kind of voluntary testing, which could lead to a sort of nationwide consumer expectation, would in fact drive up the price of beef, maybe reduce the amount that the ranchers and the cattlemen are making from their sales, but even beyond that, isn't doing anything to help consumers make sure that they are protected from the effects of mad cow disease.
No, I would disagree with that because clearly we have one of our largest consumers, which is Japan, our largest trading customer, has indicated to us that they are requiring that condition. And by Creekstone meeting that request from its customer, there's no indication that this is going to spill over into the rest of the beef supply chain.
Even if it's wrong, even if it's a stupid request, even if it's something which isn't going to do anything to guarantee the health of the beef, you're saying, yes, the money should be devoted towards that kind of testing just to please the consumer?
Well, I don't think you can call this a stupid request. If you look at the other mitigation measures that these other 23 countries have implemented that have BSE,
right.
Japan's not too far behind the European Union, which is Dean had indicated, either tests everything at 24 months or at 30 months that goes into the human food supply chain. But remember, these are countries where they have had known outbreaks of BSE, and the United States is not any differently situated than Canada was clear back in 1993 when it had its first case of BSE, but it was determined it was from an imported animal. Mm-hmm. And because BSE is not contagious, the fact that the animal in the state of Washington was imported from Canada does not adversely affect the United States BSE free risk position. The United States is viewed as a BSE provisionally free country in the eyes of the World Organization for Animal Health. And so we're not looking at this as a food safety issue. The food safety issue is addressed by the other mitigation steps that we have taken. Instead, what this is a market-driven request
right.
by our largest customer to have this testing done. And we have, a cutting-edge packer who's willing to do it. And the USDA should be facilitating this. And if necessary, put an APHIS veterinarian at the plant to oversee this testing so that we could enjoy the benefits of increasing and resuming this export market.
Back to the callers, 1-800-423-8255 to Boston now, and Todd's joining us. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are, in general, that the one of the problems that we have is that the irresponsible use of tests, that, and I want to echo what the gentleman from UC Davis is saying because I feel like he's right on the mark. The irresponsible use of tests that have no scientific evidence to support their use. I'm a physician. We're presented with patients all the time who request a test. There's, you know, full body MRIs out there now. And the problem with these tests is they don't have any scientific evidence to support their use. And what are you going to do with the information? And is the test sensitive and specific enough? And in this case, where they're testing animals that, you know, have no detectable levels of BSE, you know, the ultimate question I have is, are we potentially putting people at risk simply to make money? And this is, you know, this is what's happening in the medical community.
There is some dispute within the experts who know this testing well, Todd. Some speaking from the European countries that are using it on a widespread basis are saying, you know, we are actually finding early evidence of BSE in some of the younger cattle. So better to do the test and push at it from that point of view rather than to just simply say it doesn't appear to be effective and so we won't bother with it at all.
But does that correlate with disease in the animal and potential disease, you know, transmitted to people? And, you know, if so, then that's a good test worthy of, you know, applying at that time. If not, then, you know, what value does that test have in the prevention of disease as meat is distributed?
Let me turn.
And really, this is a market-generated test, and its application is really irresponsible.
No, I get that. I get the point about the market-generated use of the test. I think everybody is agreeing on that. I want to go back to Dean Cliver just on what we know about the particular test that is being used. While the USDA is raising questions, Dean, about the efficacy of this test, my understanding is that the one that they're starting to use today is the same test.
There are 4 or 5 tests that went through comparative evaluations by the European Union and were approved. The United States, I think, has approved more than one of them. I'm not supposed to mention brand names, but actually the one that's biggest in Europe and in Japan is made right here in California.
Is that the Bio-Rad rapid test, the one?
Yeah. Platelia. They won't mind selling more. And That's a whole other thing. But what we were doing until December 23rd was a gold standard test that emphasized specificity, essentially no false positives, over rapidity and sensitivity. Now we've got rapid tests and various state laboratories, including the one in California, are being brought up to speed to do these tests on a rapid basis, with the understanding that some of the time a positive is going to be a false positive, right, and you don't announce the result until you get a verification. But that said, the big difference is that with the rapid test, every carcass that is chosen for sampling gets impounded until verified results get back. And that was not where we were back in December of last year. We had a test that took a week or more because of the facilities and the slowness of the test itself, and the cow in question was long gone by the time that the test results were verified. So we've got a rapid test system now. We can use it. We're not about to start using it on animals under 24 months unless they look really bad from the standpoint of not being able to walk or something like that. But in Europe, they're doing 100% testing, depending on the country, at either 24 months or 30 months of age. They may get an occasional positive, and that animal's carcass will be destroyed. But Europe has done, especially England, has done a lot of testing of the edible parts of the carcass. And for cattle, they do not find prions in red meat. Brain and spinal cord, yes, but we aren't eating bread. Well, they aren't eating brain and spinal cord. We haven't declared brain and spinal cord to be risk materials in the United States until the animal is 30 months old. That might be a mistake. But more testing won't cure that problem.
All right. To Wayland, Massachusetts now. Peter's joining us. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Hello to Dean Cliver. I had a couple of issues with things you said. You've talked about testing consuming limited food safety resources. It seems that the market is willing to pay for this testing. If I've heard correctly, the packer in question was willing to pay for the USDA itself to come in and do this testing. We live in an era that worships the market, and yet when the market seeks a premium product at a premium price like organics or this, I see incredible resistance from the government to simply let market forces work voluntarily where the market forces want to take it. Again, it was your argument, sir, that this would consume limited resources. This would add to resources. It's certainly in this one instance.
Dean Clymer.
Well, I have heard people from the Food and Drug Administration, which is also involved in this, tell us how much of their annual budget had already been consumed 3 months ago in the region around the state of Washington. We are deploying limited resources, following up on this in ways that I think are inappropriate. I've been in the food safety business for 42 years. I don't make a nickel off of lobbyists or whatever. I'm just doing research and teaching here at the university as best I can. And when I see that we've got X number of people dying of foodborne diseases in the United States, none of them from variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and I see what it's going to cost the public eventually to deal with this one perceived problem, I just think that we already have arrived at a point where we have a less safe food supply than we had a year ago.
But if the Japanese are willing to pay that extra 30 cents a pound, if that's what it's going to cost for the testing, Dean, why not let the Japanese pay that and let Creekstone sort of get back up to speed?
If they want to send a brain stem along with every one of those and the Japanese want to do the testing, I guess the Japanese deserve whatever they get. For them to set a world precedent against all of the countries of Europe that have had the majority, when I heard several outbreaks in Japan, there have been 11 individual cattle in Japan that have been diagnosed with BSE, and a couple of those may or may not have been legitimate. But Anyway, it's not like cattle are dying all over the place in Japan from BSE. They have chosen their own brand of overreaction because it's politically expedient in their electorate. I think it would be a big shame if the United States overreacted in the same way, but we already are.
All right, Connection listeners, what matters when we talk about issues like who should test and should the testing be done? Is it an issue of preserving the market? Is it an issue of food safety, of consumer confidence? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join our conversation this hour as the USDA begins testing on this day for mad cow. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Quick recap on the subject of our program this hour. Small meatpacking firm in Kansas wants to do a voluntary testing on every animal slaughtered there for mad cow disease. To do that, we'll give them access to a lucrative Japanese market. They've asked the USDA to do the testing, volunteered to do it themselves. The Japanese say that they'll pay for that testing, but the government is saying no, that it would set a precedent that might cause some difficulty for the larger meat packers in the country and might actually not do anything to guarantee the safety of the beef or the health of consumers in this country. Dean Cliver's with us on the program. He's a professor with the University of California, Davis's Department of Population, Health and Reproduction and School of Veterinary Medicine, head of the World Health Organization's Collaborating Center for Food Virology. And Bill Bullard's also with us. He is the CEO of the Ranchers Cattlemen Legal Action Fund, United Stock Growers of America. And Bill, I wanted to come back to you on the last point that the Dean was making before the break, and that is just what sort of lobbying is going on here. Kevin Pence said earlier in the program, based on his own experience with Cargill, that the large meat packers in the country, Tyson's, Cargill, ConAgra, and the National Beef Packing, are very worried about this because of what the financial effects might be on them of having every animal tested. Is this a big concern for them and a big part of this story?
Oh, I believe it is. But I think the assumption that has been drawn here is without basis. And that assumption is what Creekstone is asking to do will set a worldwide precedent. This is not a precedent-setting action. This is a voluntary action intended to add value to the product. And what the packers, the largest of packers, have been lobbying USDA heavily in order to have USDA shield them from the competition of cutting-edge packers like Creekstone that wants to build a new niche market. And this is not inconsistent with the actions of the packers in the past. If we look at the issue of interstate shipment of beef, where we presently don't allow a state-inspected packing plant to engage in interstate commerce, while at the same time allow imported products that are inspected under same foreign production regime to basically have free flow or free movement within the United States. And the packers have resisted that as well. And so what they're using, or what they're doing, is using USDA to shield them from the competition that an otherwise open and competitive market would bring.
But let's be fair to them for just half a second here. If those large corporations thought for a nanosecond that consumers were going to lose confidence in beef, that consumption would go down in this country because people really started to have second thoughts about mad cow disease, then they'd do whatever they could do to restore confidence, wouldn't they?
Oh, I believe that they certainly would, because, again, that would be market-driven, just as the request upon Creekstone is a market-driven request, and Creekstone is responding to that appropriately.
Okay, 1-800-423-8255 to Raleigh, North Carolina now, and John's joining us on the line. John, thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. The issues with respect to BSE are very much the same as this whole issue of traceback. I do some consulting work in this area, and we've been looking at using DNA as a way of identifying the carcass all the way through to the store. And one of the things that happens is that the large commodity producers, the large driven companies, essentially are resistant and extremely resistant to trace back right to the plate because of the cost.
Can I just stop you for half a second, John? I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You're talking about a system where actually using the DNA of you know, what comes cellophane wrapped in the supermarket allows us to go all the way back to the origin of the animal. Is that right?
That's correct.
Is that an expensive process that you're talking about?
It's not. It is expensive in terms of what they're looking at now. But it's being driven down by the use of those tests. And also, those tests can also be used as production parameter assessments as well.
Okay, it's not happening now, right? I mean,
in some of the producers, such as Kevin, yes, there are some people looking at this, and there are some people operating in this way in order to be able to give that trace back. Now, that's an economic situation. Is it a food safety issue? I'm not sure. I know that the first guy who adopts the new technology has a tendency to capitalize on that expenditure. I mean, the first guy in makes his money back. Everybody else, it's a cost of doing business.
And what's the benefit to the consumer of being able to do that direct back to the animal tracing that you're talking about?
I think if we have a food-borne problem in the marketplace, then being able to quickly identify an individual carcass as part or part of a problem is extremely important, because that limits the amount of product that has to be recalled. It also limits the lack or the loss in public confidence in the food system, and that we now can trace that all the way back to the plate.
All right, I want to hear from both my guests on this. I'm going to start with Bill Bullard and just find out whether or not the ranchers themselves would favor the use of this kind of high-tech thing that John's talking about as a way of sort of creating a network of knowing where the food comes from.
You know, that's an issue that's very important to the U.S. cattle industry, and it's by no accident that the same groups who are opposing Creekstone's efforts are the same ones who said that consumers don't want to know where the beef originates from. Our organization helped pass the mandatory country of origin labeling law that was scheduled to go into effect in September 2004, only to be derailed by the lobbying on the part of the larger packers and USDA to prevent its implementation.
So you like this? You think this would be a good thing?
Well, what he's talking about is a traceback system, an animal identification system, which purpose is to eradicate and control a disease outbreak after it occurs. What we're looking at doing is first preventing the introduction of this disease into the United States. So while what he's talking about certainly has merit, we need to look at some of the details as to what are the costs of this and the benefits, because it is our family ranchers and farmers who are going to be shouldered with the burden of this cost, particularly on the live animal portion of that kind of a program.
Okay, now, Dean Cliver, something's in place now because the one cow that was found to be infected with BSE in Washington back in December, they were able to trace that one back to a farm in Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, it's not like we're clueless about this. And as far as whose market is being protected, this is literally whose ox is gored. I don't know whether the Rancher's Cattlemen Legal Action Fund was the one that did it, but we had a trickle of what were supposed to be low-risk beef products coming in from Canada from September of 2003 until April of this year, when some small beef organization went to court and got it stopped. So we're protecting our markets against the Canadians or against anybody else, and at the same time, why we expect to be able to go out and open the door to Japan again, even if it costs us in an international forum. As far as tracebacks are concerned, I think we have to have eventually a better system than we have. Other countries are doing it better than we are. All the same, though, a few months ago, earlier this year, I was on another phone-in forum with, among others, two, I suppose, family ranchers in Nevada who pretty well let it be known in this connection. They said they had no question or no problem about the matter of downer cows, because if the cow couldn't walk up the ramp onto their truck to go to slaughter, they would put her out of her misery and let the coyotes take care of her. And I had the impression that as far as traceback was concerned, they would be interested if somebody came up with a branding iron with barcode.
All right, 1-800-423-8255. East Aurora, New York. Alan's with us now. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I guess I'm piggybacking on a question that was previously asked. I just want to know why the cattle producers have not gone to the ear tag, which prevented so much problems when the Canadians used it in the cow that was found with BSD. And we do not have a simple system of ear tagging all the cattle.
No, I think it's a great question, Alan. If I look back to the close-up of the investigation of the mad cow case in Washington, there were, I understand, 80 cattle that entered the United States from Canada alongside that infected one, and 52 of them were never found because the ear tag system isn't held up in the United States. Bill Bullard, is this a flaw that exists in the system right now?
Well, we have to realize that the reason this Canadian cow had a metal ear tag in its ear is because the Canadian government required it for exports. However, the United States does not require it. And the present marking system that we have in the United States is even more permanent than an ear tag. In many of our states, we do have branding laws where animals have been branded for well over a century,
right,
and provides us traceback abilities. In addition, we had some bulls that had been exported from Canada into the United States, and we were able to trace those through Montana and South Dakota in a matter of hours during that investigation by APHIS. And so we do have that ability, and I agree with Dean, we need to improve our ability in that respect. But an ear tag is subject to loss at a significantly high rate.
Right, but a better marking system is definitely required, though. You're agreeing with that point that Alan's making, right?
And that's one of the issues we're looking at in order to work towards the development of a national animal ID system.
All right, to Marblehead, Massachusetts now. And Lou's joining us on the line. Lou, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. My question is simply, why does the beef cartel prevent us from stores from selling tested beef and untested beef? Of course, a tested beef would cost a little bit more, but let the consumer decide whether they want tested beef, much the same way we do with organic produce. I don't buy organic produce, but I appreciate the ability to be able to buy it if I want to pay the extra money for it.
And if you were in the supermarket, Lou, and you saw a steak that cost $10 that didn't have the, we ran a test on this animal sticker, and another piece of steak that cost $12 that has that sticker, what would you do?
I probably would choose the $10, the lower price one, because I don't think the testing's necessary. But I sure would like to have the choice rather than have the beef cartel decide for me which one I'm going to eat.
Dean Cliver, it sounds like a kind of a reasonable consumer approach to the whole issue.
Well, I have been, over much of my most of my career, an advocate of irradiation for raw ground beef. We're destroying obscene quantities of raw ground beef in the United States because we uniquely have declared E. coli 0157H7 an illegal adulterant in raw ground beef. I want the choice to be able to buy irradiated product in my supermarket, and it isn't the meat cartel that's doing that. It's consumer activists, particularly Public Citizen, that's the one of the subsidiaries of the Ralph Nader Group that has blocked that. Congress and others are influenced way more by consumer activist groups, in my opinion, than they are by the beef lobby.
So, Bill Bullard, where's this going to end up? Do we have to wait for a more accurate test before this is going to there'll be a solution that everybody can live with?
I don't think so. I think Creekstone needs to persist in its efforts to achieve approval for its voluntary testing. Our organization wishes to help Creekstone in that effort, and we believe that this is going to be temporary. Again, precisely because the United States implemented these very robust mitigation measures. The Harvard School of Risk Analysis has done a study indicating that because of the dates of implementation of these measures in conjunction with the incubation period, the long incubation period of BSE, we have actually exceeded the time frame in which cases would likely become evident here in the United States. And as a result of that, we think that even if Creekstone begins testing and no cases are found over the course of 18 months or 2 years, the request from Japan may be withdrawn, and none of the fear that has been associated or expressed by the packers and USDA regarding a worldwide precedent-setting action would ever come to fruition. So we believe that we should follow the dictates of the marketplace, allow Creekstone to begin the testing process, and then continue to work to prevent BSE from being introduced into our U.S. cattle herd.
Bill, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Bill Bullard is Chief Executive Officer of Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund, United Stock Growers of America. Dean Cliver, thanks a lot for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Professor Cliver is with the Department of Veterinary Medicine at the University of California, Davis. Earlier in the program, we talked with Kevin Pence, Vice President of Operations at Creekstone Farms in Arkansas City, Kansas. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.